is the 10th of October, 2024, and I am speaking in a last-minute substitution with Neil from the Northeast U.S., and what happened is that Neil Foster, I was scheduled to talk with, and they're in the direct line of Hurricane Milton that is due to touch down, you know, in Tampa, but it's going to cross right over them. And so they're doing all these preparations, and he and I just recorded about a 10-minute update, and I have these odd little ghost in the machine problems with Neil Foster, and his side of the conversation didn't record. So I may do something anyway. I'd gotten some footage of the prep and so forth for that. But at any rate, the reason I'm not speaking with Neil Foster is he is trying to make preparations for Hurricane Milton. So this is Neil from the Northeast U.S. And thanks for hopping in last minute, Neil. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Yes, I'm just getting ready myself for the New England winter. It's going to be very cold soon. So, yeah, it's getting in touch with the cold right now. It's, yeah, so just getting ready for that and staying busy with work and, you know, hanging in there, as I say.
Mm-hmm. Now, you obviously are not from northeastern U.S. Do you want to tell people where you're from originally? And
You know, just south of the Yorkshire Dales, like a valley in the north west of England. It's near Hebden Bridge area. So if you can remember the All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh, yes.
So it's, I grew up in a similar area to that and similar characters in that show that I you know, grew up around. You know, real characters that were down to earth and good common sense, and, you know, so I had, that was the environment I grew up in, and, you know, public school and all that, and it was a very good upbringing, because we had a lot to, we were always out, no, obviously no cell phones, we were all, you know, you went out for the day, you know, you did your young gatherings and went out, up, you know, on the moors, and caused trouble and did all that, and it was actually, you know, thinking back on that life then, it was actually a very good time, you know, and I feel lucky to have, well, I don't know, lucky, whatever the word is, but to have actually experienced that and not have to deal with all these electronic devices that I am a very, you know, a big minimalist with now. Like any of them anyway, you know what I mean? You've got to spread the truth and use these, you know, this technology to do that, and I have spent quite a long time, like, going through all kinds of researches over the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, listened to a lot of talks and purchased quite a lot of books over the years. And I feel like I should get reading these books and turn these computers off. And but I'm busy with work and stuff like that. So, but yeah, so that's where, you know, northeast of England. And, you know, I really did have a good sort of a life back there, you know.
Well, Alan and I loved the All Creatures Great and Small, and he's mentioned it on talks before, and just the whole life, everything that was portrayed there. And yes, you know, it was thinly fictionalized, but it was based on a real veterinarian's experiences and the people and the love, the Yorkshire Dales people. Your accent really brings that whole show back, you know.
Very tough people, hardy people, especially. You need to be with it. Yeah. Whether you get there, you know, with the driving rains. So,
what did your folks do there?
My folks, my dad had, so it's like a working class area, but sort of middle class as well. And my dad did well for himself, very hard working. He started off as a mechanic and then he ended up going into the textile business and became partners with someone and became very successful, fairly successful. He had a mill in Sorby Bridge, which was nearby, and he did, you know, so we sort of lived, we kind of lived a bit higher up on the hill sort of thing, you know. He had a bit, we did okay. And all my friends were, you know, just very good friends, and they, you know, they lived sort of like, in, you know, lower down, but it was good, very good upbringing, and unfortunately, my father ended up losing his business, all kinds of things happened, and I ended up Well, I ended up coming over here for a few reasons, really, because, you know, when I got to my teens, I started going out to the pubs and all that. Mm-hmm. And that was really good because, you know, all right, a bit young to be drinking. But then along came the, I don't know why I'm talking about, but yeah, the rave scene came along and, in Manchester. So they labelled it Madchester because all these bands started to spring up, like in Spiral Carpets, Stone Roses and all these sort of indie bands. And then you had all this techno music and then all of a sudden all these party drugs came flooding in. It was almost like the second wave from the 60s of like promoting and injecting, you know, the drug thing into society. So I was going, you know, that, and for me that sort of ruined the, you know, just the normal going out to the pubs with friends. All of a sudden we got into these mad crazy raves. Uh-huh. And, you know, taking these silly, you know, party drugs. It was, you know, of course you had fun, but it was just stupid. You know what I mean? The stupid things that you do when you're going through those teens, you know. So, you know, my father started to lose his business and, you know, things weren't going great at home either. So a few friends decided to go to Key West to start with, just to, just to go there and do some soccer training and all that. And, I sort of followed on after that. So that was, back in 94. I had a stint then in 94. And, I worked there for a while, even though we weren't supposed to. It was a 3-month visa that you get when you come over, you know, like a travel visa. And then we bought a van and went traveling all around America and, had a great time doing all that. Ended up going through Texas, spent a bit of time, I don't know, far away you are from Humble, is it? Which is in the north, near Houston.
What's it called?
Humble, H-U-M-B-L-E. I think it's just near Houston.
That's nice, no.
Town anyway, yeah. So it went all over California, you know, Las Vegas, all those main places to visit. And it was a really good time, you know, just traveling around. Of course, we spent, you know, the original plan was to, you know, sleep in the camper van, you know, just now and again we'll get a hotel and take a shower and all that. But, because we're so young and, you know, pretty, you know, at that age, we just ended up blowing all our money, you know, way too soon. And then all of a sudden we had to, you know, find work out there in California. And then anyway, we ran out of money. We drove back down to this place north of Houston, and then we went to I ended up staying in touch with a friend who had who'd moved up to Nantucket Island. Anyway, I went up there with like no money at all. I got there and then I found some work in the first week, and I managed to make it through, you know, the first week without having to borrow money and get like a wage and start off from there. And then from there I actually did okay, and you know, that island, there was a lot of work and mm-hmm. Well paid for like trade work there, so that was quite an experience, you know. And then I came back and I spent a bit of time in Sweden for a while, and then I went back to England for a while, and then in 2003 I came back over here. So I've been here since then. Now I live just north of Boston. So yeah, it's been quite a journey doing all that, and ending up here, you know. So.
Well, that's you didn't stay still. What do your parents think about all of your traveling?
My dad thought I was just going to go there for, you know, a couple of weeks and then go back, you know, but I ended up sticking it out. And, you know, things weren't going great at home at that time, so it wasn't that much for me to go back to. Otherwise, I probably would have gone back. Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to go back anyway because, you know, my visa had expired, but. You know, 19-year-old, you just do whatever, you know. We just did whatever we wanted to do, you know. I mean, I've always been very curious, you know, and I've always been sort of anti-establishment, I suppose you could say, you know, in my own sort of way. I've never, you know, bought into, even though I went through the phase of like, you know, wanting to make a lot of money, but I never really got into that. And I've always sort of been looking. I didn't know quite the same old story where you just don't know exactly what's wrong, but there's something not right. So you start to, you know, look around. And I've always been very into, like, looking at, like, old books and, you know, I haven't read a lot. I can't say I should probably read a lot more than I do. when I'm not too busy, but I've always been sort of curious for to find things from different bookshops, and I ended up coming across one very good health book called Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fowler. So at the time I was wanting to do some cooking, so I ended up getting that. But but I've always been looking for and I've never, I've always known something wasn't right with the whole damned establishment. And I suppose in 2014 is when a friend put me onto the 9/11 thing, which is how a lot of people start, looking for truths, and you go through all that, and then you find some people aren't quite what you thought they were, and then you look at other researchers, and I've gone through all the Michael Tesarian and David Icke, and a few people that Alan has been in touch with as well. Is it Clint Richardson? I think Freeman Fly was another one that Alan was talking to. So I've looked at all their work, but they always seem to, there's one little thing they don't seem to address, which is, the David Icke a reptilian thing, So if you stay away from that and the aliens, then they have a lot of good things to say, But then, the more I looked, so I went over them all, Jordan Maxwell. And then a friend put me on to Mark Passio. I don't know if he has a website. What stuff is happening? He's quite, straightforward, straight-nosed, type of guy. So I was listening to a lot of his podcasts on his website. And at the end of his website, on one of his sections, he has like a list of people, that he recommends to look through. And that's when I got to watch John Maxwell. And he has Alan's on there, Alan Watt. And so I'm like, okay, Alan Watt. The funny thing was, at that time, I was listening to Alan Watts, the philosophical entertainer. And so I'm like, Alan Watt. And I come across Alan Watts. Alan Watt, what's going on here? So then I started to get on his website and listening to him. And he was the one. And I'd listened to the other guys, and they had a lot to say, and I know a lot of them sort of have some sort of what do you want to say, a connection or something like that, and playing certain roles for you know who, but I started listening to Alan, and I'd always default back to Alan, and then I got onto the I'm sorry, I'm saying too much all at once here.
No, you're doing fine.
And then I really liked the Jackie Petru series. And there's some really amazing deep things in that. And then I'd go listening to some other people, but I would always default back to Alan. And then I got onto to Neil Foster as well, and it was those were the two sort of go-to kind of guys for me to listen to. So I got a lot out of Neil Foster's interviews and talks as well, as well as Alan. And so in the end, it's sort of like all funneled down to Neil Foster and Alan. And then, of course, at the worst possible time, he passed away. I couldn't believe it. And then, obviously, for you to carry on and keep this website going, I really have to say thank you very much. That, they kept it going and made it, and really enhanced it as well with all the work you've put in. This history thing as well has been great. And, you're keeping it going well, pretty much the only person I listen to. There's a few others, but, you're the main one,
Well, so. That's nice. I wish that Neil was able to keep up the reality bites. Things changed over there with the sovereign independent, and it's just because when he has his own, he gets great guests, and he's a good host. So, but I talk to him regularly, and we cover some ground, so that's good.
Yeah, I remember I kept tuning into Reality Bites and seeing that nothing had been put up, and then the next, he's doing the Real Histories with you. And
one thing that happened, this happened probably early on in Operation C, I lose track of time, but the Sovereign Independent website just kept getting sustained hits one after another, and they would just be disabled. You know, it was obviously orchestrated.
Yeah.
You know, so they ended up just moving their operation over to Telegram, and they're still there. They put out, you know, interesting content. I go and find articles, and of course, Neil brings a lot of things to my attention that come directly also from Sovereign Independent, but it isn't the same. You know, when they had a website, they had Neil's show, and they had other things that they were hosting that it was a nice thing, but you can't, I mean, once the guns are put on you and you're under that kind of attack, if you don't have a huge staff, you know, constantly reinforcing your infrastructure, you're not going to survive that kind of attack. So,
well, I'm glad you've got the patience, you and Neil and everybody, you know, to do all this on a computer, because I wouldn't have the patience for it. And,
no,
do it, and you're doing it, you know. So, well, you know, I'm glad you're doing it. So, keep it up, you know. Keep it going. Well, I know you will.
I plan to as you know, as long as is humanly possible. Now, that was one thing that, you know, Neil and I actually said today before, when we were going to talk regularly, and we didn't know that he was going to be in direct line of fire of this hurricane, that we would be talking about what happens next, because we both have this feeling that our window on the internet to be able to say anything is really closing quickly. And I have to do, for certain channels, I have to do a fair bit of self-editing, or, you know, bleeping out words and putting, you know, clever images in to get the point across. But it's becoming clear that especially if you look at other countries and see the kinds of things they did, like, for instance, in Canada with the trucker strike, and the way that anyone who even donated a small amount of money to them had their bank accounts closed. And, you know, now we're all, even in the U.S., if you say something on one of your social media accounts,
yeah,
that could be you, because this is the social credit system. We're under it. It's here, and it will become more obvious. So I think it's just a way. I've had a paper address book and a notebook where I write people's, anybody who writes me a letter or sends me their telephone number, that kind of thing, I keep it in a book. And it's just a matter of,
keep the paper thing going as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Paper, for me, sorry to interrupt you, Adrian.
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, just cash is what, cash is king, you know, even though that's another story in itself, the cash thing. I use it, you know, the thing is, you know, some people, you know, say, oh yeah, you know, they're sort of semi-awake or awake, and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, cash, and then, but then they're using the cards all the time. It's like, well, what can you do, you know, as an individual, right? So use cash. Well, I use cash, and I even use it, I started to use, okay, so you start using cash on certain things, and then I'm like, okay, how can I do even better? Okay, so I use my card. I was using my card to purchase gas, which is the convenience of it. All right, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm not even going to do that. I'm going to go inside, get out of my truck, and I'm going to go in, I'm going to get what I need, and I'm going to pay cash. I'm going to walk back out and get back, fill up and go. You know, so you can, do you know what I mean? If you just do things like that, you know, where you can, what you can do on an individual level to at least throw a spanner in the works for this cashless madness. So I'm trying to, like, be completely cash whenever I think so. But you'd have a job.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good point. The recording that failed this morning, the little, 10-minute update on Neil's prep, one of the things that he mentioned was that yesterday he went to the dollar store to get some more supplies, things that they needed in the house. And there were about 8 or 10 people in line, and they had a power outage at the dollar store. The power went out, the cash registers went down, and the cashier said, I can help anybody that has cash, and the rest of you are out of luck.
Oh.
And Neil said that he was the only person in line of like 8 or 10 people that were there who had cash to pay. He said, I always carry cash. I've got plenty of cash because things like this happen.
Yeah. It's just, you get, you shouldn't have satisfaction using it, but you do when you know all the, you know, all the electronics and the blips on the, and the screen's going on, because you just give someone, you know exactly where you are with it. You don't have to keep looking on your computer and looking at your account, make sure that's gone through or this hasn't been happening. In fact, not that long ago, I actually had somebody, somehow, I'd got my older, my account number, and they were using, there was somebody in, somewhere in Ohio using a limousine service, and I'd not checked my account for a long time. In fact, I should have never signed on for online banking. I did at the time because I wasn't too, you know, I was a bit naive then, you know, with what's happening now. They'd taken maybe 1,500 out over the course of, a few, but, you know, I went straight to the bank, they gave me back straight away, then they did an investigation. It's like, you know, for every person that gets robbed with cash, you know, because people are like, oh yeah, well, they can't, there's probably thousands that get an online scam happen. So. Uh-huh. What would you rather use, you know, that's more safe or what's better to use? You know, get some cash in your pocket and have your wits about you, you know.
Yeah.
People are worried about getting robbed, but people are too busy messing about with their phones, you know, these days. And you could rob a house and nobody'd even know they'd just, you know, staring at phones. So, I mean,
yeah.
So...
Well,
you know, it's quite what's needed on an individual level, and that's, you know, using cash is one, and refusing the scanners at the airport's another one, because I refuse them all the time. Well, of course, they're introducing these facial recognition things at the airports now. Most people don't even know that you can just say no to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like I go through there, you know, an airport, and it's like, if everybody did this, they'd have to take these machines out. So there's the power. But no, you know what I mean? If people just didn't...
Said no.
Why? You know what I mean? They'd have to take these machines out, you know, and that's never going to happen, of course. I'm just thinking to myself, you know. And then I remember traveling to England once, and we're trying to get people to go through the, the facial recognition, and I went straight to the counter, and I don't normally like kicking up a fuss, but I was annoyed, and I said, look, this is a civil rights violation, this is, you know. And I said to her, can she have this sort of like funny smirk on her face? I said, and then one of the guys said, he said, well, they get you, you know, when you walk through the airport. I said, well, no, yeah, but I haven't done it willingly, with my name behind it, you know. And then the next time I went through, there was a girl there, and I went through, and she was like, oh, and I started to come, you know, I said, you know, what's this about? This is just a civil rights violation, she said. And I said, you know, shame on you for allowing people to go through it. And I tried to go through airports smoothly. I don't like to kick up a fuss, because airports are quite, you know, not the places you want to be getting trouble in, because of all the, you know, the terrorism, you know, acts and all that that they can use against you. So anyway,
I think as long as you're reasonably polite,
yeah, that's what you have to do, and I try and be and just make it through. But I, what, you know, when you know you can refuse these things, then you know you have to do it. You know, if you're of like mind, like me, you have to take the action and actually. Don't go through the scanners. Tell them you don't go through it. You're supposed to say, legally, you're supposed to say, I'm opting out of this.
Yes, but, and then they say, okay, we're going to frisk you down or take you in the private back room. Yes.
But I've gotten away with just saying, I'm not going through that. I'll just say flat out. But legally, they're supposed to have you say, I want to opt out. So uh-huh. I could have sued them and got them in trouble. Maybe I should have done. No, I mean, the thing is, I just want to get through there without any, you know, but I want to make sure that they're not going to, you know, do all those you know, scanners, you know, all those ridiculous machines they have in there. I mean, I don't mind a metal detector because, you know, that's fine. Walk through one of them and beep, if, you know, just for any, you know, that's it. But these scanners are just a nightmare, you know. I mean, all the radiation they're giving off, all the RFRs.
It's terrible.
Getting at it, it's just sort of like getting, what can you do on an individual level if you don't like that? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got your website, you're spreading the truth of doing that. And you feel a little bit sort of helpless, like me sometimes, because I'd like to feel like I want to do more. I mean, I talk about Alan's work and all that to people, but I'm pretty much just getting on with my own carpentry work, and I have a few hobbies I do. But I just feel, you know, what can you do on an individual level? I use cash, you know, so whatever I can do on that, you know, that right down to it individual level is what I try, you know, I do. So at least I've got a bit more of a clear conscience, you know, doing that. So I feel like I could more. I mean, I don't want to try and make myself out like I am. But, you know, what can you do apart from, you know?
Well, you know, a couple of things Alan always said is think for yourself. So that's a key thing. And another thing that he said is say no. So whenever you're saying no, when you can say no, whether it's a scanner or, you know, not using a card, those are good things.
Yeah, at least that's, you know, start off with that. And I'm sure people listening, you know, of like mind to this do a lot of this, I hope. And, you know, I know a lot of them are quite techie and they're doing their bit. So, but for me, I'm a traditional, I like nature, I like being outside, I like doing things. I do read some interesting books now and again, but I like to be, you know, to be by a computer for me is not, it's not for me at all.
No. What have you read recently?
Oh, you know, I'll tell you what I've read that you've read that was very good. Was that Tom O'Neill with CIA, you know, with Charles Manson.
Oh, that was good. Yeah. I can't remember. I can never remember the title of it.
It's some things, you know, and Charles Manson. I forget the title now. But it's a big
chaos. We better look it up right now because this will be a frustration. But that was a really good book, was it not?
Well, what was good about it was the guy was sort of a, you know, very genuine sort of writing research, and what it was, and he kept saying he couldn't, you know, he was trying to avoid all the time, you know, when he's doing all this research into what was going on. Like how he was trying to avoid going down the conspiracy route, you know, mm-hmm. trail. But mm-hmm. what ended up being was that was the truth trail, and he had to go down it to find the truth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what was a good book. It came to that, didn't it?
He did, and it took a, the name of the book was called, it was called Chaos.
Yeah, that's it, Chaos.
Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s. And it was really good, and the thing about it is it started off as an article that he was supposed to write for a publication. I don't remember which, but like a magazine article. And it turned into a book that took him nearly 20 years to write because, like you said, he went on the truth trip and he just couldn't let go.
Mm.
It was good.
Terry Melcher and all those kind of people that he mm-hmm. got from. He started to get angry with him whenever he, you know, got close to what was really going on. And yeah, it's a... Mm-hmm. The book. In fact, I've got a bad habit of starting books and not finishing them, but that one I did finish.
Alan used to always say, well, with the CIA, they threw LSD over the hedges at college campuses and so forth. But when you read this book, you do understand the CIA involvement in the drug business, not just, you know, distributing drugs, but testing it out. How was it tested? How far back do these kind of tests go to see how people behave on drugs? You know, another one that was interesting, did you ever see a documentary that Alan referenced a few times? It was about Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. It had a long title, but it was a German filmmaker made a documentary about Ted Kaczynski. Did you see that one?
I think I did see it a while ago.
Well, what was, I mean, just speaking of drugs, there was an interesting connection there between one of the fellows that ended up representing scientists. So in other words, and he's an agent that is still on the go, and interestingly, he had connections to Jeffrey Epstein. But his whole business for decades was making scientists into stars. And one of the experiments that they talk about from his young fun days, of course, they're trying to make it, you know, just like you were talking about the rave scene and the party drugs and so forth. Well, one of the things that they were doing was testing out strobe lights, LSD, how do lights affect people? How do drugs and lights in combination affect people?
Involved in all that, Jerry Garcia and all.
I think
the whole thing is like a complete control setup. It's amazing how it all works, real, you know, how we have like the hand in everything.
Now, once you start to just like you said with the O'Neill in that book, once you start to do the truth dive, it's pretty big.
Isn't it? Pandora's box is open, you know, once you start.
I wanted to just get that guy's, John Brockman, and Alan mentioned him a bunch of times, but he came up, he was featured in the Ted Kaczynski documentary, and he was a star maker, a science star maker. So, fascinating group of people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, another book I've started to read, and I've had it in my bookshelf for a while. It's called Sex and Rockets by John Carter. And it's about Jack Parsons.
Ah.
APL lab and his...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and all his exploits with L. Ron Hubbard. And, you know, all these different Crowley, you know, and all those people. I mean, those guys, what they were doing, they're just absolutely insane, you know, doing all these rituals and, you know, setting up the OTO and all stuff like that. So, I'm about a quarter of the way through now, and he's just starting to get the, connection with, Aleister Crowley and,
Oh, that sounds like a good one. What's the title of that one again?
It's called Sex and Rockets.
Sex Rockets.
Sex and Rockets, yeah.
Sex and Rockets, okay. So besides reading, you like to get out in nature and...
I go out every morning, sometimes running, and I get my real news, you see.
Uh-huh.
Animals are doing this, you know, that's true, you know.
That's it?
So I do that every morning, and then I just take my time. I usually start work at 9 o'clock, so I don't like to do long hours. But you know, the good thing is I enjoy what I do, and I work directly for just homeowners. I don't go through any contractor. I used to do this one guy that I used to work for, a really good guy that passed a few years back now. But other than that, I got established in the area. And I just have one little advertisement in the local newspaper that I get a lot of work from people and, you know, word of mouth. And so I'm pretty much going out working and come back for lunch. So that's good to actually, you know, to do that. And another good thing was that I could stay out of the way when all the madness was going on. You know, I was, in the country a bit here and... So it was good. So I'm just glad I don't work for any sort of, you know, big, and because I did a bit of engineering at school and, I could have gone all the way with that probably, but I didn't bother. I just wanted to work, pretty much learn, you know, all my trade over here in the States. But I just work for myself. If there's any bigger jobs, I have a friend who's of similar like mine as well, you know, so he's a good friend of mine. So he gives me a hand if ever. Is like a big job, you know, a bigger job than normal. But I usually can handle it all on myself because, you know, I like to say that I'm healthy and I look after myself and I enjoy, you know, another hobby I have, I actually ride motocross bikes. So that's something I do on the weekend. And I play darts with a neighbor. And we had some good dart games. So darts and motocross, what a combination.
Yeah.
Quite the contrast, you know, but
yeah.
So those are my two. So you need an escape, don't you, from, even though work is kind of an escape for me, because I'm away from the computer, I don't take my phone with me to work, and I'm just doing my jobs, you know, in that moment. So that's an escape from it all. And
I was just speaking to, I was just talking with Graham and Gabrielle in Germany, and they said, you know, work is their life and life is work, and they combine the two. And it's a nice philosophy. I like that. And I work all the time too, but sometimes I need a little checkout, and I call it a checkout. Maybe I go outside, I'm in the garden and weeding, and that's nice, looking up at the chemtrails in the sky. But sometimes I need to watch a really stupid movie. The stupider the better, I find. It's a checkout.
I get that, yeah, definitely. Even though, as most people, I don't, with my TV, back in 2012, I used to watch quite a lot of TV, actually, before then. You know, I'd have a certain lineup that I used to watch when I got back from work. And then Saturday night lineup, like Cops and America's Most Wanted and all that. But when we moved into this place, there was no cable. Like, there was no... It was going to be expensive, basically, to get, you know, cable hooked up in my car. And that's when I sort of combined that, sort of, like, folded over in Finding Truths. It's like, well, I'm glad I didn't get one anyway, so... But like I say, I do watch an occasional DVD and a few shows, and I do watch some sports on this computer here, actually. Minimal, really. I mean, who can watch? I don't know how people can stare at those HD TVs, for one, because it was around about then when I stopped watching TV, and I remember going into, like, a bar, and they did something to your eyes, like, it made them, like, give you like a headache or something. You know, like the big flat screen. Oh, they're a horror show, you know, and people have these giant TVs bigger than the wall in their house. You know, I hate them, you know, so. And what they put on them is just an absolute. I mean, all right, the thing is, there is some good shows that are. I find now the TV programs are revealing, as you probably know, a lot of what's going on sort of subtly. But they're putting it in fiction. But they've been doing that all the time, haven't they? Putting things in fiction for people to take in subliminally. But I think if you can watch some of these shows, I can just think of one off the top of my head, like that, you know, that's going. You can see what they're putting out objectively. You watch things like Alan says. You seem to just not get involved in the emotive content and watch them, you know, objectively, and you can actually enjoy them, you know. But there's so much entertainment going on, isn't there? You know, your mind spins if you you have all these different series that you watch, and you know, so stay away from it all. And
well, I think you have to be very careful and very judicious. I remember in Sudbury going into an electronics/TV store at one point. We were looking for something, and we had Jason that had, you know, was helping on the website. So the three of us were in there, and that was when the HD were first coming out. And they, you know, looked at that and they said, oh my goodness, take a look at what's going on there. And Alan was showing something that we don't notice now because we're so used to seeing that, but he was showing the way that the range was messed with. So our eyes perceive things close up, and then they perceive things at a distance. This is the way our vision works. But HD brings what is in the background forward. Yeah. And with a heightened reality, a heightened color, it's closer, and so it makes everything, it messes with your perception, and then you add that to what they're doing with the virtual and augmented reality, and
very dangerous.
It is very dangerous, yeah.
It is, especially if you're oblivious and you go and sit and stare at them. That's when, that is dangerous, you know. And then, of course, the radio frequency radiation coming off them and, you know, all that's bad for you. I think I read a little bit of a book that I got given. I'm not sure about this guy, Joseph Mercola. Have you heard of him? Dr. Joseph.
So I actually get his newsletter. I get his newsletter every day, and I, you know, download a PDF or look at some of the things that he puts out. He's very health focused. I know he has a huge team in Florida. That's where he's headquartered, and he's been at it for years, and he puts out a lot of good information.
But you've got to be careful of, so many things. You've got to defend yourself somehow. In fact, I ended up getting one of those RFR blockers that you can put your phone in, and I tried it out, and it didn't connect to the Wi-Fi, so I know it works.
I have one of those as well,
your router and all that. So, and I put one on the router, and it still works, but apparently, I mean, it sounds like it's a silly gimmick, but it does seem like they do have some sort of blocking, that you can maybe block out some of that it's emitting to you. So I recommend, getting something like that. I'm sure, like you say, you have things like that. Just, all these little things help. I know it's a bit of a business as well, but, you do have to protect yourself, especially from these electronic devices that they have, these days. There's no way I'm carrying a phone around in my pocket. I mean, I know a lot of people do, and they're just so reliant on them, and that's their choice, and some people are techie and they like them, and they can use them for a lot of things, but for me, I just don't. I mean, I held out with a flip phone for a long time, and I get this text from T-Mobile saying, you're going to have to get a new phone soon because we'll no longer be using 3G. Uh-huh. And that was, 2 years ago, and it was like July, and he said July the 4th or somewhere around there, and he said that it won't work anymore. Anyway, I kept it. It kept working until November, and it was still working. It probably would still work now, but where I live was a bad reception, that wouldn't connect to the Wi-Fi. So I ended up going to the T-Mobile store and getting a different phone, and then I'm like, ah, shit, I shouldn't have done that. I wanted a flip phone, but I got, an Android.
We're lost because the old flip phone, the 3G technology and all that, it's gone. That's history. So smart, not smart, you're getting it. Protecting yourself from the Wi-Fi. I mean, I was sleeping surrounded by it. So for me, I made really good progress, in the wintertime to get a room where all I have is a light. That's it. And nothing else. Yeah.
Get out a lot. You've got the good weather down there in Texas. Get outside a lot, walk around in bare feet, ground yourself, and just, it's good to just, be away from all that for a while. So still do that as often as you can. I'm sure you do.
Oh, it's nice. And right now it's just the ideal weather. It's perfect because it's 25 degrees in the Fahrenheit. What is that, 72? I can't remember. And it's just perfect. It's absolutely ideal weather, and it'll probably be that way for a week or 2 weeks, and then we're going to go into, it's warmer than that. My goodness, we're pushing 80, but still, it's when you have days that are 105 degrees Fahrenheit, 80 feels pretty blissful.
It's not bad, is it? I mean, it gets very, as you know, like hot and humid here in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
This area in particular get a lot of mosquitoes, so when it gets to the fall and it cools off a bit, you get near 70 degrees, 70, 75, and there's no bugs around. It's the most pleasant time of the year. Fall is beautiful. It's like when the sun's out, that's my favorite. Well, not favorite, but I actually like the seasons, but this time of year is nice because it's, you're not getting bitten all the time. And it's a pleasant temperature,
That's nice. So,
yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you stepping in last minute with me and doing this. It was really nice.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether I wasn't sure whether I was going to do it at first. I thought, because I don't really like going, you know, I'll just do it. And especially if it helps you out as well. Keep it going with the other real histories. The thing is, you have like so many things spinning in your head sometimes that you want to talk about, that I could talk about a lot more of, but you have to sort of narrow it down, don't you?
Well, I tell you what, I love your willingness to be the backup, and if somebody falls out, I'll just ring you again and we can get one of those other things that's spinning around in your head and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One thing I enjoyed that Dr. Sean Ross one you did.
I haven't heard back from him. He emailed me not too long after we spoke, and he wanted me to cover, I wasn't sure if he wanted to do it with me, but he wanted me to cover oxygen deprivation in Swiss prisons.
That's I never knew about that, you know, side of it, you know. So
it's terrible, but I emailed him back and I said, well, do you want to cover this with me? And I haven't heard from him. So he's kind of nomadic, you know.
Yeah.
And when I spoke with him earlier in the summer or late May, whenever that was, he was with some friends in France, and where he is now, I don't know. So if he surfaces again, we might have another chat. So.
Okay. Well, I'll be looking out for that. And thanks for letting me speak. And
thanks. Thank you, Neil.
And all the best to everybody, all the listeners, and I'll speak to you.
Okay. And then I will just mention here, too, that I just got a message in from Neil Foster. He doesn't know if he can re-record 5 or 10 minutes because the thunder and lightning have started. Okay. And then next week's Real History that is scheduled is with David Hughes, who has been, he's a historian and he's doing some technocracy work. So that's what's upcoming. And thank you all for listening.
Okay, goodbye.